It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's Your Turn on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's Your Turn, 724-283-2525. And now, it's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us on the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn. Can you believe it's the last day of July? Me neither. Seems like just yesterday we were getting ready for Memorial Day weekend and the start of the summer. And here we are, the tail end of July. Hey, there's still a lot of summer stuff coming up. You know, this weekend we have the Marine State Park Regatta at Lake Arthur. And then next week, it's the Butler Farm Show, which is certainly a huge event in early August every year. And we're going to be talking about one of the big activities coming up at the Farm Show in just a moment or so. A little bit later on the program today, we'll be chatting with historian and writer Peter Golden. Nothing is Forgotten is an interesting read, I think. We'll talk with him a little bit later. But first, we say hello to a number of guests who are going to be with us to talk about the cheese auction at the Butler Farm Show next week. And we say hello for the first time in quite a while to Gene Coomer. Gene, it's good to see you. It's nice to have you back in the studio.
Thanks, Dave. I'm glad to be back. It's been too long.
Yes, it has been. You were the overseer of the 4-H program for a while through Penn State Extension. You now have other duties. You're working
Correct.
For a dairy organization, is that right?
Yes, I work for the American Dairy Association Northeast, and we are the dairy checkoff program that does all the promotion and advertising for local dairy farmers in the Northeast region.
Well, we appreciate you gathering up some young adults, some young people who are involved in dairy.
Yeah.
In 4-H and bringing them in, and we're going to be talking with them in just a few moments here. But we wanted to chat first with a couple of ladies who are here in the studio. They're members of the Cheese Auction Committee. Let's say hello, first of all, to Tabitha Bowser. Tabitha, good to have you here.
Hello.
Yes.
Nice to be here.
Also, Michelle Zhang is here. Hi, Michelle. How are you?
Hi. I'm good. Thank you for having us.
Okay. We need to, first of all, talk about this cheese auction thing. Tabitha, for folks who aren't familiar with it, what's it all about? Are you going to be auctioning off a big block of cheese, or what's the deal here?
Each 4-H participant has a basket of cheese, which ranges around 5 to 9 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And they take their cow in along with the cheese basket, and it gets auctioned off.
My engineer tells me I need you to get just a little bit closer to that microphone. There you go. That's perfect. So these are all 4-H'ers in the dairy club, is that right?
Yes, they have to be a 4-H dairy club member, mm-hmm. and they have to be a member of that club and show for 3 years
mm-hmm.
before they can participate.
And I know that the cheese auction takes place during the farm show. What day?
Wednesday, August 7th.
So that is a week from today.
Yes.
Yeah. In the evening, I assume?
Yes, 8 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a new dairy pavilion to show in.
Oh, where's the new dairy pavilion? Michelle, do you know? Have you seen it yet?
Yeah, actually, we checked on it recently. The progress came along really great. It's next to the 3 dairy barns that are located right inside the airport gate. So mm-hmm. when you come in the back airport gate off of Buttercup Road, the dairy barns are right there on your right when you walk in. And right past the dairy barns is the new dairy pavilion.
Excellent. You had to work out of a tent before, didn't you?
Yeah. It got interesting sometimes with cows. They might want to knock it down, try to knock it down or something, but pavilion should be a little bit stronger.
Well, I always enjoy walking through the dairy barns when I visit the farm show, so I know just where the new pavilion is going to be.
Great.
So these young people come in. Everybody brings a basket of cheese. Is that right, Tabitha?
The cheese auction committee prepares the basket.
I see.
We have many people that donate to the cheese and the meat that is in the basket.
What kind of cheese?
Varies. Every year it changes. We normally do the basic provolone, mozzarella, mild cheddar, and then we always throw a small specialty cheese that the committee picks mm-hmm. Just to give something different in there.
get any of that extra sharp cheddar. That's my favorite. I like a little extra sharp.
I don't think we have that in here this year, but
I like that on my crackers. You know. Well, I could go with a mild cheddar.
Yes.
That's good. And you have a cheese committee that helps to choose what goes in there?
Yes, there's five of us. There's myself, Tabitha Bowser, Michelle Zhang, Janice Kennedy, and Kathy Hartzell, and then Ashley Bagan.
I understand that you are one of the folks who actually got this started, Tabitha. So tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, I did. 5 years ago, I was really interested in getting something for the 4-H Dairy kids to be able to do, and we started the cheese auction, and this gives them a chance to make a little extra money with their 4-H projects.
I guess up until this time, they really didn't have anything special at the farm show, right? Because there's the junior livestock auction. We talked with some young people about that earlier in the week, but for the Dairy Club kids, nothing. I mean, they're not selling their dairy cows, right?
Yes, they didn't have nothing. They don't have, you know, they never have an animal to sell, or, you know, it was just whatever premiums they made from showing that week. So this gave them a little bit of extra something to do.
It's also, Michelle, it's a push for dairy because a lot of people, when you talk about dairy product, they think milk, you know, and only milk. I understand that cheese is really big. It's been growing for several years all over the country. People are eating more cheese here.
Well, yeah, people may not realize, you know, dairy is in a lot of your diet, a lot of products. You know, the ice cream. Who doesn't like ice cream?
Right.
Yogurt, that's really popular now, and different types of other cultured things that you can make with milk, like yogurt. And so, yeah, this really gives the kids a chance to promote the dairy industry and promote their work ethic. You know, these kids, they've grown up on, a lot of them grown up on dairy farms, and you know, they're up with the sun every day, milking the cows, cleaning the stalls, getting feed ready, mixing feed, spreading manure, all those types of things that go along with, you know, and then in the summers, baling hay and straw and all that. You know, the dairy kids really do have a strong work ethic.
You have kids who are involved in the program, Michelle?
Yes, I have three kids.
What about you? What about you way back when? Were you also involved in 4-H?
Well, I was not, but I come from a four-generation dairy farm family, and our family is celebrating its 100-year anniversary.
Congratulations. That's terrific.
Thank you.
100 years.
Yes. My sister, when she was younger, started showing, and some of my brothers showed as well, but my sister really was the one that had a love for it, and whenever my oldest got to be of age for 4-H, she encouraged him to start showing along with her, and as each one of my kids has aged into the club, they've also wanted to start showing, and so we've been doing it now for 6 years. It'll be my son's sixth year, and so it just is really something that they look forward to every year. My sister, who now lives in Somerset, she married a dairy farmer and moved out there, and so that's where most of our animals are in Somerset. We make trips out there, and the kids work hard out there helping her whenever we get out there.
Dairy farming runs in the family, huh?
It does,
and
yeah.
Where is your family farm, the 100-year anniversary farm?
It's in Mount Chestnut.
Oh, yeah,
it's the
okay.
Lesney family.
Just west of Butler here. We know where that is.
Yeah.
So the kids look forward to this, and that's probably just what you hoped, Tabitha, when
yes.
you kind of got this going 5 years ago.
Yes, they do. I think all the kids that, you know, are able to participate, and if they're not able to participate, they wait for the year that they can participate. So.
Mm-hmm. Did you know it was going to be a success? Here you are 5 years later, and it's rolling along every year.
I hoped it would be, and I'm very anxious. I'm very excited for this year with it being the fifth year, so, and hopefully there's many more.
How many kids in the 4-H Dairy Club, by the way, roughly?
About 30 kids in the club, I think.
Yeah, probably in the club, but there's not everyone participates. Not every, you know, kid's able to participate. We only have 13 participants in the cheese auction this year, so roughly half or a little less than half are participating.
So they'll each have a cheese basket, and they bring a cow, too, to the pavilion?
They walk the cow, their participating cow, through the ring to, you know, show that that was their project animal and that the cheese, you know, represents what that animal, the cheese yield they produced.
So what's a basket of cheese go for these days?
It varies anywhere.
We hope a lot.
Yes, we hope a lot, but it varies anywhere between $400 and $1,000.
All righty.
Yes.
Well, that's good stuff. That's good. And is it similar to the livestock auction where the kids are able to put this money toward higher education and stuff like that?
Yes.
Do they get to keep some of it?
Yes, they get majority, you know, the check goes to them and they, you know, can do as they please with it. You know, many put it towards education or other animals or whatever they, it goes to the kid, mm-hmm. the 4-H member.
There's going to be a special basket auctioned off this year. Jean Coomer, tell
yes.
our listeners about that.
Yes. Well, the Dairy Club kids decided to do a fundraiser, kind of a community service project. And the Cooper family are dairy farmers, were dairy farmers here in Butler County in Slippery Rock area. And Lisa Cooper Leach, who grew up here, who's an alumni of the Butler Dairy Club, she and her family have a dairy in Linwood, Kansas. And they were devastated by a tornado on May 28th. And they lost everything, all of their buildings. I think there are a couple buildings standing, but the only thing that had a roof left was their house. And they lost 12 animals. And so they've had to take their animals to different farms, the ones that were still, that survived the tornado. And so as they continue to clean and rebuild. And so the Dairy Club kids wanted to do something to help send a little bit of money their way to, you know, help them rebuild and just to mm-hmm. send some love from Butler County to Lisa Cooper Leach.
What a nice gesture.
It is.
You showed me a picture of one of their barns. It's just a pile of sticks.
It's terrible.
Nothing
yeah.
left.
It's yeah. yeah, it's really devastating when you see that. And the kids had all seen, you know, video clips of it and everything else. And so when we suggested maybe we should do something, they were all on board. They said, let's do something to support this family, a fellow dairy farm family.
I've never been to Kansas, but we know that's tornado country from The Wizard of Oz, you know.
Yes,
that's
exactly.
Where Dorothy and Toto were whenever
exactly.
the tornado
exactly.
hit. It's flat as a pancake out there, isn't it?
Yes. So well, and interestingly enough, it was, you know, we had the tornado that came through here on May 31st, 1985, mm. and so Lisa actually remembers that tornado from here at home in addition to the one that just, you know, totally totaled their farm in Kansas.
They lost so many of their animals. Mm-hmm. I hope they were all uninjured.
Yes, luckily they have three daughters and they were away in Wisconsin for a few days, I think. And Lisa and her husband, Rob, were actually milking when the tornado came through and they were able to get to the basement in the house and they survived and their dogs, they got their dogs in too. So.
Wow. So tell us about this one special basket.
Yeah, so we're just calling it, you know, kind of a charity basket, and the Butler County Dairy Promotion Committee is helping to donate the cheese that we'll put in the basket, and we have a couple other things. I might actually throw in a lost my train of thought. Some cookies, a batch of chocolate chip cookies. I like to bake, and so that's one of the things we may throw in. And we have a couple other little things we're going to throw in, and one of the other moms in the 4-H'er are going to help put the basket together, and then we'll sell that at the end of the cheese auction.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then everything raised will go to the Leach family.
Wonderful gesture. I'm sure they'll be appreciative, and that's good. It's good for the young people to be involved in something like this,
exactly.
too. You learn
exactly.
at an early age to mm-hmm. help the less fortunate.
Exactly.
Help out
exactly.
in times of trouble.
Yep.
Well, we're going to take a break here because I want to talk to some of the young people who are members of the 4-H Dairy Club. We have several of them here in the studio, so we'll take a break and we'll bring those young people on and get them mic'd up and ready to go. We will be back with more on the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn here on WISR right after these messages.
Tanglewood, your hometown center for entertainment, proudly presents the Skyliners. It's been 60 years since they topped the charts with Since I Don't Have You, but this famous Pittsburgh doo-wop group continues to thrill their fans. See the Skyliners live and in concert at Tanglewood, Saturday, August 10th. Doors open at 6, dinner buffet by Chef George at 7, showtime at 8. Only $35, and as always, it's BYOB. For tickets, call 287-0021.
Tobacco for Less is Western PA's largest glass emporium, and they now have a store in Butler at Pullman Square Plaza. What makes Tobacco for Less different from other stores? For starters, they have so many glass pipes to choose from. They also feature a walk-in humidor and a vape juice bar. And of course, they carry a variety of standard tobacco products too. The Tobacco for Less Health and Wellness Department stocks a large selection of high-quality CBD products. For all your smoking and vaping needs, check out Tobacco for Less with locations in Butler, Sharon, and Aliquippa.
Welcome back, friends. Great to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program on this Wednesday. Mostly gloomy, although a couple of times I saw the sun pop out here in Butler today. We'll be keeping an eye on the radar for you. There's still a chance, although somewhat reduced now, of showers and thunderstorms today. We want to say hello to three young persons who are here. They're all members of the 4-H Dairy Club. Let's go around the horn here and introduce them first of all. Nolan Coomer is here. Nolan, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Thanks for having me.
Also with us is Ethan Zhang. Ethan, good to see you.
Nice to meet you. Thanks for having us here.
You didn't get the memo to wear the 4-H t-shirt today. Also with us is Maggie Bowser. Maggie, how are you?
Good.
Yeah, good to see you. You're going to have to lean into that mic for me, Maggie. You've got this wonderful, beautiful, delicate voice, but we want to make sure that people can hear you. Well, let me talk with Maggie. First of all, how long have you been involved in the 4-H Dairy Club there, Maggie?
I've been in it for 7 years, but I was in it for a little bit because my sister's a year older than me.
Mm-hmm. 7 years? It's a long time. Are you going to be too old soon to be involved, or you're not sure?
I have probably about 4 years
left. Oh, so they won't kick you out for a while, huh?
No.
Well, tell me, are you from a family dairy farm?
I live on a farm, but we just raise dairy steers.
I see. So tell our listeners the difference between a dairy steer and a dairy cow. I know, but make sure everybody else does.
A dairy steer is a male cow, mm-hmm. and a dairy cow is just a female cow.
And you're not going to get any milk from the dairy steer, are you?
No.
No chance of that. Let's say hello to Ethan here. Ethan, how long have you been involved in 4-H Dairy Club?
6 years.
6 years? And do you come from a family dairy farm?
Yep, I'm helping my uncle's dairy farm in Mount Chester.
So tell me a little bit. I've talked with 4-H'ers who raise animals for sale at the junior livestock sale. Is that what you do in the 4-H Dairy Club? You raise dairy cows, or you just tend to them, or what do you do?
Well, I raise them for a little bit, and then I show them at the shows that we have at the farm show.
I see. Have you done this before?
Yep. I've been doing it for 6 years.
Okay. What about you, Nolan? Tell us a little bit about your work. You come from a family dairy farm?
Yeah, my aunt, I help her at our farm in Evans City. It's a 350-acre farm right outside of Butler, so I help her a lot there in the summer and in the winter.
You've been involved in 4-H for a while?
Yeah, 7 or 8 years, just about.
You still in school?
Yeah, I'm a sophomore, Seneca Valley.
Seneca Valley?
You'll
be a sophomore?
Yes.
Sorry to bring that up, because I know it's only a few weeks until you're back to school. In fact, I think some high schools have already started, like band camp and that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's
all
crazy.
The preliminaries. You sound real thrilled about it.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that. So you'll be a sophomore.
Yeah.
My questions might sound silly to someone who's been around dairy for all of their lives. What kind, what breed of cows do you show?
I show Holsteins, which are black and white, and then Jerseys, but mostly the Jerseys I got from my sister because she ran out of her years in 4-H this year, so I interpreted all of her Jerseys. So I have about 8 to 10 cows in my name. So
Holsteins are always black and white.
Yeah.
Jerseys have a specific color?
They're brown and black, but they're a lot shorter than Holsteins, so that's how you can really tell the difference is the height difference.
When I was a kid, I grew up in a small town, and there was a dairy farm on the edge of town, and it was called, they called it the Golden Guernsey dairy. So Guernsey is another breed of dairy.
Yeah, Guernseys are either red and white or orange and white, but you sometimes get them confused with the red and whites, which is another breed of Holsteins because they look exactly the same based on how light the red is on them. So kind of got to ask the person what breed it is because it gets mixed up a lot.
This is like identifying trees by their leaves.
Yeah.
Being able to look at a dairy cow and figure out what breed it is. Yeah. Do certain breeds produce more milk, or is it just one of those things?
Holsteins and Jerseys usually produce more milk than others. So that's about, they produce two times, maybe one time. I don't know. But they do produce a lot of the milk we have in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, we all know that brown cows produce chocolate milk. That's a well-known fact, right?
No.
That's not true. Ethan's laughing at me. You think I just made that up, huh? Tell me, Ethan, and lean into that mic for me, please. Do you spend a lot of time at the farm show during the week, or do you just come and go, or what's the deal?
Yep, I stay there all week, and we bring a camper there, and we stay.
Ah, yeah. Enjoyable, huh?
Yep.
Have you done that for a while?
Yep, ever since I've been in 4-H.
Yeah? What about you, Maggie? Swing that mic over so I can make sure that I can hear Maggie. Wow. Do you spend the week at the farm show, too?
Yes, we stay all week at the farm show.
Mm-hmm. I never go to the farm show, but I don't visit the dairy barns because there's always lots of young people in there who obviously are hanging out with their animals and with each other, right? I mean, you know, you get to make new friends and so on and so forth, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Huh? Okay. Jean, these are wonderful kids.
They are, aren't they? Yeah. Great kids.
Yeah, and learning responsibility at a young age.
Absolutely.
How to care for these animals, how to feed them, keep proper records, and you know, and all that sort of thing.
Exactly. That's all part of 4-H is the record keeping and just making sure that they're aware of all of the things that their animals need. And it's definitely skill building, life skill building, and builds discipline. And like Michelle said, they have a great work ethic because they have learned that it's a day-to-day thing. It's not whenever you feel like it.
Mm-hmm. Do you get to meet new people?
Yeah.
Nolan, because I'm assuming that at least occasionally the 4-H Dairy Club meets.
Yeah.
You have meetings occasionally?
Yeah, I go to a couple shows throughout the year in Harrisburg twice a year, and then in Louisville, Kentucky, where I get to meet a lot of new people and talk to them about their animals, which really helps me out to understand what they're doing and what I can do to get my animals to their level.
You have to truck your cows the whole way there?
Yeah, it's that's the worst time is trucking them because it's just so long. It's 4 hours to Harrisburg and then about 8 or 9 to Louisville. So
Harrisburg would be bad enough, but I can't imagine pulling a trailer all the way to Louisville.
Oh, yeah. There's even shows up in Wisconsin and Canada that people go to.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you take
more than one cow in a trailer?
It depends on how big your trailer is. Our trailers, we can fit about 10 to maybe 11,
wow,
like that. Yeah, we have a pretty big trailer. But that's how big the cows are. If they're, like, really small, then we could probably fit, like, 15. But if they're, like, milk cows, then we can probably fit 7 or 8.
Have you done well? Have you ever won any ribbons or anything?
Yeah. All-American in Harrisburg last year, 2 years ago, I won junior champion. And this past week, I was at Lawrence County for this show at Lawrence County. It was if you got first or second, you like qualified to go to Harrisburg this year. So both of my cows, Holsteins, qualified to go to Harrisburg. So I'm looking forward to showing them there.
Don't be so modest. This is pretty good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to ask a really dumb question. If you're showing a dairy cow,
yeah,
what are the judges looking for?
Judges usually look for their legs and feet. They don't want them to be like a straight up post. They want to have some bend to them. They want to see if they have ribs and they have a good fill, which is how wide they get when you feed them.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to see how straight their rump is, which is their spine, which is at the top of the cow. You don't want to curve them down because that does not look good. And then you also want them to be wide in the front end. You don't want them to be together and their legs be curving, and you want to be straight, because then that opens up the cow a lot more.
How do you learn all this? This is
my
terrific.
Aunt. And Justin Burdett.
Yeah. Well, and kind of what you were saying, Dave, it's the friends you make and the people you know that you meet through 4-H and through showing cattle that you learn from. And we have friends, you know, all across Pennsylvania, as these guys do. And like Ethan goes down and learns from his aunt and uncle down in Somerset County, who are really good dairy people and good show people. And it's you learn from each other, and the kids learn from adults, and adults learn from adults. So it's kind of like a whole big family showing.
Yeah.
Hmm. Do you, Ethan, have you gone to places to show your dairy cows too, far away places?
I went to Harrisburg 1 year, I think in 2016, but other than that, we just stay and show at the farm show.
What about you, Maggie? Are you a traveler? You take your dairy cow?
I've been to the dairy show down in Harrisburg once, but for the most part, we just show at the farm show.
Is when you go to Harrisburg, are we talking about the State Farm Show in January? Is that what you're talking about, or is that something else?
No, the show, it's different. It's called All American. So is it all of PA that come? I think it's all of PA, but they fill like a whole three barns full of cows.
Yeah, there are like 500. 2,200 cattle come from all across the Northeast. Yeah. So.
And the show's all day. So.
So that's different from the State Farm Show, which is in January.
Right,
This show's in September, early to mid-September.
Mm-hmm. So do you look forward, Maggie, to Farm Show Week? It's a big week next week for you, right?
I'm actually not going to Farm Show this year because my mom had just got a back surgery, but I usually do really look forward to Farm Show.
Well, we wish the very best for your mom, that's for sure. Yeah, I'm sure that your thoughts will be with her if you can't be at the Farm Show. Yeah. Hey, I want to talk with Gene Comer just a little bit. I mentioned earlier that Gene, we used to visit with Gene on a periodic basis whenever she was involved with the 4-H'ers through Penn State Extension. Now you are working with the, did you say it's Dairy Northeast? Forgive
me. Right, American Dairy Association Northeast. We're part of the Dairy Checkoff Program, which is a national program, and then I work for our region is in here in the Northeast.
So Northeast, you're talking about the whole Northeastern United States?
Yes, we have six states in our region. It's Pennsylvania, New York, Maryland, Delaware, New Jersey, and six counties in Northern Virginia. And so the Dairy Checkoff Program is 15 cents of every 100 pounds of milk that a dairy farmer sends goes to the checkoff program, and we then use that money to promote the dairy industry locally and nationally.
Mm-hmm. And you write articles and papers for the group? Is that what you do?
I do. Actually, my job is to tell the dairy farmers how we are spending their checkoff dollars. So I get to communicate with the dairy farmers. I do newsletters. We do weekly e-blasts. We do different events like Ag Progress Days. We go to Ag Progress Days and farmer events. We host a big dinner at the All-American Dairy Show for all of the exhibitors and that sort of thing. So my job is I get to talk to farmers. So doesn't get any better than that for me.
You're talking about Ag Progress Days up at Penn State?
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
Do you travel to other places in the Northeast and the other states once in a while, too?
Yes, I do. We've been to, our headquarters is in Syracuse, New York, so I have been up there, and we've been to Maryland and Delaware and New Jersey, and so, yes, we do get to travel around. We attend a lot of, like, co-op meetings, you know, Dairy Farmers of America, Land O'Lakes, Maryland, Virginia. Any opportunity we get when there's a dairy farm meeting, me and my team, which is the industry relations team, we get to go and hang out with farmers. So it's great because I talk their language because I grew up on a dairy farm. And like Nolan said, we actually still milk a couple cows at home. So so we're still really involved in the industry, and it's a wonderful experience.
And this Northeast region is one of the big dairy producing parts of the country,
right? It is. We have about 11,000 dairy farms in our region. So we're one of the bigger, they're called state and regional groups, but we're one of the largest in the whole national system. So
I know a lot of people might think when you're talking about dairy or cheese, they think Wisconsin.
Right.
Because of those goofballs up there that wear the cheese heads, you know, for the Green Bay Packers. You see them on TV. And Wisconsin, big on cheese.
Yeah,
dairy,
good.
No question.
Great dairy state. Just but, we like Pennsylvania a little better.
Northeast is, when you talk about a region, the Northeast is big time.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Time. We have, I think is it 6,000 dairies just in Pennsylvania? Something like that. So, and all together in our territory, like I said, we have 11,000.
Dairy industry going okay?
Things are a little tough right now. The price of milk has been low for dairy farmers, and unfortunately, a lot of farms have been selling out and selling their herds. And I think things have kind of stabilized a little bit right now, but it's a tough haul, and that's partly what we do in the Dairy Checkoff Program is to try to push the sale of more milk and more cheese and more yogurt, and so we can keep our farmers in business.
I understand that pushes on to make sure that schools are offering milk to kids, which when I was a student, that was standard procedure.
Correct.
You got that little pint of milk every day,
exactly,
in the carton.
Exactly.
And that's good.
It is. Yeah, we focus a lot of our attention, especially here in the Northeast region, because we have 7.2 million kids, I think, and we have 1,800 school districts that we serve And we have a whole staff on staff that works with school nutrition directors and that sort of thing to make sure that we have milk in the cafeteria and that kids are taking milk. Because it may be there, but kids aren't taking it, and that's a problem too. So. Mm-hmm.
And of course, there's cheese. As I was chatting earlier with Michelle, I think the consumption of cheese in the United States is up considerably
yes.
in recent years.
Yes, that's really, fluid milk is down, but the consumption of cheese has gone, you know, way high. So, and at the end of the day, it's still a dairy product, and it's still selling milk to make the cheese. So eat your cheese, that's mm-hmm. what I say.
That could coincide with the increase in wine consumption as well.
Maybe.
You know?
Whatever. We'll take it.
Wine
we'll take
and
it.
Cheese is yeah. a good combination.
We don't care how it gets sold. We just want to make sure that it gets sold.
Well, the wine industry is also growing exponentially,
yes.
Both locally
yes.
and across the country. So.
Especially in the Northeast. It's, you know, we have great, you know, in that Northeast corridor up there. Along the lakes and stuff is perfect mm-hmm. for growing grapes.
We have a lot of local wineries, too, that are
yep.
producing, and you can't beat wine and cheese, that's
no.
for sure. Once again, to recap, for folks who perhaps weren't with us, Gene, when we began our conversation here today, in addition to the cheese auction a week from tonight, next Wednesday at the Farm Show, there's going to be a special basket auctioned off. Go over the details
yes.
on that again.
Yes.
First, please.
So the cheese auction at the Farm Show is next Wednesday, a week from today, August 7th at 8 p.m. at the Farm Show. And the cheese auction benefits that committee and the kids that sell. But the Dairy Club is doing a special fundraiser as part of that. And they are selling a cheese basket to benefit Lisa Cooper Leach's family in Linwood, Kansas. Lisa was a Cooper who was a dairy farm family here in Butler County. She's an alumni of our club. And their farm was devastated by a tornado at the end of May. And so the Dairy Club kids here wanted to support one of our own. And so they are selling a cheese basket with cheese and a bunch of other things, and that all of the proceeds will go to the Leach family in Kansas. And actually, some of the kids are even going to donate a portion of their personal cheese basket to also contribute to the Leach family. So I think that's pretty cool that the kids are taking it not just as the club, but also individually seeing it as an important thing to do is to help a fellow dairy farmer.
Is this a live auction?
Is
an auctioneer?
It is a live auction, yes. We'll be in the new Dairy Pavilion at the Farm Show. And the kids actually will come in and they have a another 4-H'er will help carry their cheese basket and they bring their cow in. That is the cow that is, you know, it's not actually their milk, but it represents mm-hmm. the amount of milk that their cow gave. So it's a live auction. You'll get to see the kids there. And it'll be a live auction. For the Cheese Committee does their own variety basket and then also for this donation basket.
And it's open to the public. Anyone can stop
yes,
in.
Yes, we encourage
bid.
Anybody. Hey, and if you know if you can't be there and you want to call in a bid, just let us know and we can take call-in bids as well. So
today's day and age, we do it anyway.
Exactly, exactly.
Anyway, all for a good cause and to help these young adults. And we've been able to chat with some of them today. We appreciate them stopping in. Most of them on summer break. Everybody's still in school, right?
Yeah.
So here you gave up an hour of your summer vacation to come and talk to us. That's very nice of you. We appreciate that. Nolan Coomer, Maggie Bowser, and Ethan Zhang visiting with us. Thanks, gang.
Yep,
good to talk to you.
Thank you for having us.
And thanks to Tabitha Bowser and Michelle Zhang, with whom we chatted earlier. They're both members of the Cheese Auction Committee. Thank you all.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks for being here. We'll take a break. When we come back, we'll be chatting with Peter Golden next on the It's Your Turn program for a Wednesday. Please stick around. We'll be back after these words. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location, downtown Butler, to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler.
I can't remember the last time I went to the dentist. Now I'm too embarrassed to go because my teeth are in such bad condition.
Unfortunately, this person is not alone. Many folks put off going to the dentist because they fear being scolded for neglecting their teeth. This is Dr. Bob Todd with a special message. Dentistry today is faster, easier, and better than ever before. At our dental office, we don't believe in making you feel guilty, no matter how long it has been since you've seen a dentist. We know fear and embarrassment can cause a cycle of procrastination. If it has been years since you've been to the dentist, call us today. We will help put your mind at ease and bring your smile back to health.
If you hate going to the dentist but know you have a dental problem, help is only a phone call away. Dr. Bob Todd and his friendly dental team will answer all your questions and care for all your concerns. For complimentary information or to schedule an appointment at their Butler office on Evan City Road, please call 282-7774 or on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Got a good novel to talk about, listeners, on the next segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey. Our guest is author Peter Golden. His latest book is called Nothing is Forgotten. Peter, nice to meet you. Nice to have you with us for a few minutes here today.
Thank you, Dave.
Peter Golden is an award-winning journalist, historian, and now novelist. He's written quite a few books. Nothing is Forgotten. Wow. This is a book that actually weaves together the Cold War, World War II, even a little bit of what we're experiencing in today's world. Right, Peter?
Yeah, it does, I think, to some degree, because what we're experiencing today is a mirror, mirrors what already happened.
Mm-hmm. So the book opens in the early 1960s with your main character, Michael Daniels, or there's another name for him, right?
Misha Denov. It's his grandmother, his Russian grandmother, calls him that. Mm-hmm. She shows up in 1948 and sort of helps to raise him, and it's sort of their story and then later her story.
So in the early 60s, Michael is... Well, he's the host of an underground radio show in New Jersey.
Well, for some reason, that seems to appeal to a lot of the radio people I've been talking to. And, of course, you remember, maybe some of your listeners remember, when FM was the much younger, poorer sibling of AM radio, and Michael starts an FM rock and roll show and in New Jersey, in a somewhat limited area. And lo and behold, the CIA is pulling it out of the air and rebroadcasting it into the Soviet Union, in part because Michael is also fluent in Russian, mm-hmm. and he does these kinds of joke interviews with Khrushchev, and he says all these wacky things in Russian, and he plays this Russian music sometimes, and he thinks it's very funny, as do a lot of the teenagers that are listening to his music. But the CIA had a different idea, and it was a prevalent idea at the time, and that was that modern youth culture could go a long way to undermining Soviet Union. Mm. And to some degree, I can't say it was responsible for it, but it certainly helped. And their baby boom generation was enthralled, much of it was enthralled with Western culture. I mean, Gorbachev was a Elvis fan, and Putin was a Beatles fan.
Well, listeners in Russia will include another character that you introduce in your novel, Yuliana Kosoy. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly.
You are doing great. Yes, absolutely. She's a war orphan. There were many of them after the Second World War in the Soviet Union. I think probably 40% of the 60 million people who died in World War II were Soviet citizens. And she gets involved, she's raised by sort of a foster father who's a smuggler, and then ultimately becomes involved with various intelligence agencies, and she also becomes involved. Meantime, what's going on, of course, is the Holocaust is starting to work its way into American consciousness. This is after the Eichmann trial,
mm-hmm.
because it was televised, and that's in 1961. So people are starting to become a lot more aware about the Holocaust. Certainly when they saw pictures afterward and were horrified by it, it sort of went away for about 15 years. And then it came back with a vengeance. At the same time, the Russians and Americans were fighting over these ex-Nazis. The Russians wanted to try them, and the Americans wanted to hire them. So and there was some split in the American government at the time about hiring them, but they wound up hiring some awfully terrible people. And the Russians used this to great advantage by beating up on the West Germans and the Americans for allowing these people, for not trying these people.
Yes, Adolf Eichmann, who had escaped to Argentina, but was tracked down by the Mossad and eventually apprehended and tried and executed in Israel. And that really brought the Holocaust back to the minds of many people here in the United States.
Well, I did. In fact, that's where the word Holocaust comes from. It's an American journalist, Paul Jacobs, who is looking to describe this Hebrew word, which Shoah, which means disaster or something. It's a biblical term.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't have a word for it. So he uses Holocaust with a capital H. That's in 1961. That's the first time it's used. The trial, everyone focused on Eichmann, but in Ben-Gurion, who was the prime minister of Israel's mind at the time, the trial was about the survivors. It was not about Eichmann. You know, they held Eichmann for days in that house before they brought him out of the country. And they simply could have shot him. I mean, if they just wanted to execute him, they could have just shot him and walked away. But they didn't do that because they wanted this testimony. And it was the testimony that brought this to everyone's attention. It was televised. You know, they filmed it, and they shipped the film all over the world. Every day at the end of the trial, they sent the day's film out. I remember watching it as a child with my parents.
I've seen the repeats of it. I've seen the film. It's a fascinating story. Listeners, if you're joining us a little bit late on this segment of It's Your Turn, we're talking with author Peter Golden. His latest book, Nothing Is Forgotten. Now, we don't want to give away your novel, but there is a development that we mentioned the lead character, Michael Daniels, and also Yuliana Kosoy in Russia. There is a plot device that happens, and that's the sudden death of Michael's grandmother, and she was murdered, right?
Right, and he's very close to her as she winds up murdered in the family candy store, which she runs, and he has no idea why this would happen, and he becomes determined to find out. The police can't solve it, and he starts on this journey. He winds up in Munich. I call it Four Freedoms Radio. To some degree, it's based on Radio Liberty.
Mm-hmm.
And so begins this journey that takes him into the Soviet Union, to France, to Amsterdam, out to Los Angeles, back to New Jersey, to Atlanta, all over the country, and to find out why his grandmother was murdered. And the way I saw it as a writer was this. Michael learns about the Holocaust much in the same way Americans primarily learned about the Holocaust. And so it's his revelation about both the Holocaust and what happened in the Soviet Union, and his grandmother, who was more than just she wasn't just in a concentration camp, she was involved in other ways. And it's that discovery, I think, that moves the book along. And certainly it's why you want to turn the page, to find out what the heck is going on. But that was my intention as an author. But it was heavily researched. I think in the back there are probably 10 pages of source notes. I did a lot of interviews for the book. I did certainly a lot of reading for the book.
A lot of it
is just based in fact.
Speaking of interviews, my goodness, I was looking through your biography here, and as a journalist, you have interviewed a lot of people, several presidents, Nixon, Ford, Reagan, Bush 41. You interviewed Henry Kissinger, Alexander Haig, Yitzhak Rabin, Shimon Peres. Wow, that's pretty good, Peter.
Yeah, and Gorbachev as well. I did them. I was doing a book biography of a man named Max Fisher, who was a sort of a private diplomat, and then I wrote a history of the Cold War. So I had access to these people, and I interviewed them, and it was wonderful. And if you go to my website, which is petergolden.com, you can hear excerpts from some of the interviews. I put them up, and so you can listen to them. It was a fascinating idea. It had its lighter moments. When I went to interview Richard Nixon, in those days, the tape recorder for a journalist was pretty big. It's not like the micro recorders that we have now. So I was carrying it, I was told, I guess for obvious reasons, that he had mixed feelings about being taped, and I wasn't really sure that he was going to allow me to do that, but I managed to, when he extended his hand to shake my hand, I managed to drop my tape recorder on his foot, which was not a great way to start. But he was very nice about it. He was a fascinating interview. Listening to him was like listening to history talk. It was really something.
Was this prior to the Watergate scandal breaking open that you
talked about? No, this was many years afterward.
Oh, wow.
In fact, the subject of the interview, to some degree, was the impact that Watergate had on foreign affairs. Hmm. So, which was profound, unfortunately. So we spoke a lot about that. He by that point, he knew he had fumbled. Mm-hmm. He knew he had dropped the ball. I mean, I think he was far wiser, and I don't know that he ever lost his anger about it. I think he felt picked on, but I think he saw that he could have done something. He could have just simply fired those guys and just gotten on with it, but that the cover-up was a bad idea.
We have a few more minutes, listeners, to chat with Peter Golden, and we'll pick up our conversation with him here on It's Your Turn on WISR. Right after these words. One of our sponsors on the program today is the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. You know, they have started just within the past few weeks their collection of excess garden produce. You backyard gardeners, if you've got extra produce, consider donating it to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank. They make it very easy. They have a collection every Saturday morning from 8 a.m. until 12 noon. You can just drop off your excess garden produce at St. Michael Hall. It's right behind St. Michael's Church on Center Avenue on Butler's south side. There'll be someone there you can drop it off. And you drop it off Saturday morning. It is distributed the following Monday to the needy families through the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank. They've been doing this for several years. It has been a great success. You can imagine how wonderful it is for these families in need. You know, most of the stuff from a food bank is non-perishable. By its very nature, you know, you've got to keep it there for a while. But to be able to get fresh, nutritious, homegrown garden produce is wonderful. Healthy, too. Now, they don't want all your stuff, but if you find yourself with, all of a sudden, excess tomatoes or peppers or beans or whatever, instead of letting it go to waste, and why not consider donating to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank? Again, every Saturday morning now from 8 a.m. until noon, and that'll continue right on through at least the middle of September. You can drop off your excess garden produce. St. Michael's Social Hall, right behind St. Michael's Church on Center Avenue on Butler's south side. You know what the folks at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul like to say? We stand tallest when we stoop to help others. Think about it. You'll feel good about it. Hey, we want to give you a program note here coming up on tomorrow's program. It's one of our popular periodic features. Ask the Lawyer tomorrow on It's Your Turn. And we hope that you can be with us as we'll be asking questions of Delia Bianchin. Will be with us here in the studio today, local attorney. So that'll be at 12:30 for the Thursday edition of It's Your Turn. Ask the Lawyer tomorrow. We'll be right back.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus,
we're going your way. Getting there stops here. Just hop the bus, easy and economical. Just hop the bus. No car, no problem. The bus will get you there, 'cause that's what we do.
Hop the bus,
leave the driving up to us.
The bus,
we're going your way.
Welcome back. Chatting with the author Peter Golden on this segment of It's Your Turn here on WISR. My name is Dave Malarkey. We're chatting about Peter's latest book, Nothing Is Forgotten. I saw this categorized by one of the testimonials as historical fiction. Do you think that's accurate, Peter? Is that how you'd categorize your book?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it is. But as I said, it's deeply rooted in what happened. There's some telescoping of events. You you combine certain characters, you combine certain radio stations. Not all radio stations broadcast rock and roll into the Soviet Union. Some broadcast news, some broadcast political commentary. But in the end, I'd say it's a pretty fair representation of what was going on at the time. And some of it's just pulled right out of history. The most interesting thing I learned, and I didn't know this when I started the book, was that West Germany was trying to pass a law that would have exempted all of its citizens from being tried for war crimes committed between 1933 and 1945, which was a stunning proposal, it seemed to me. Meantime, other groups are busy trying to establish memorials at the old concentration camps, which the Germans are trying to tear down. So it's a very interesting moment in American history, in German history, in history of the State of Israel. And all across the world, the Cold War sort of dragged everybody in across a whole range of issues. It wasn't just the Holocaust, of course, but it's a wonderful time, and it happens to be my lifetime. So I guess I had an extra incentive to explore it more fully instead of just simply making stuff up about it.
Well, there are hundreds and hundreds of books about World War II, but not too many who examine the impact of the war on its survivors and their descendants. And that's certainly where you focus in Nothing Is Forgotten. Did you have to do a lot of research into World War II, or were you fairly knowledgeable prior to?
I've been researching this area of history for a very long time. And what happens is, of course, is the more you learn, the more you want to learn, but you sort of have a much stronger stronger background, and so you sort of know a lot more about what's going on, and you start getting into the fine points, which is where I say I discovered that law, the West German proposed law. I was stunned; I'd never read about it before, and then I went back and read even more about it, and I read newspapers' discussion of it as it was unfolding. So, yeah, I found the whole thing fascinating.
Interesting the way the Allies divided up Germany at the end of World War II, and it kind of set the stage for the Cold War, did it not? East and West Germany and Berlin divided among the four powers?
Oh, it's horrible. The whole thing is horrible. It's such a... when you look back on it, but the truth of the matter is, Stalin... the Cold War starts during the Second World War. To some degree, because they knew what Stalin was up to. He was looking to control all of Eastern Europe. And he would have been happy for the war to go on for another 2 years. He could have sucked up more territory. Mm. And we were exhausted. Americans didn't know what was going on. People talked about, Patton's famous thing, we should invade Russia. We didn't have the soldiers to invade Russia. This country was absolutely exhausted by the Second World War. I always say that famous Eisenstadt picture of the sailor kissing the nurse,
yes,
that was one view of the end of the war. And certainly all the mothers and fathers and people having wives having their loved ones finally come home. But don't forget, 400,000 people died in that war in Americans. More. And they were here, too. They're survivors. Also, all of these wounded soldiers came home. Also, we had a whole new world very shortly, a world in which both we and Stalin had the atom bomb. And so to go back and fight again, as we did again in Korea, there is something exhausted about the United States that we don't talk about, but becomes more obvious in retrospect. Underneath all of the financial expansion, underneath all of the new suburbs and the baby boom, but there was something else going on, and we don't really get a good look at it until after the Vietnam War. It takes a while for history often to play out. It doesn't play out in headlines. It plays out in records, in dusty records, not in headlines. And it's one problem Americans have in understanding history. They want to know what's going on today. Well, what's going on today has maybe a lot more to do with what was going on 25 years ago.
Let's talk about some of the parallels from post-World War II to today, actually during and post-World War II. We had thousands of refugees. We see that today in several different parts of the world, most recently in Syria.
Right, and you see it was a large part as early as... early in 1945, shortly before he died, FDR was talking, trying to talk people into creating a Jewish state. Because they knew they were going to have all of these refugees wandering around Europe. And, in fact, he went on Valentine's Day in 1945, so it's only a couple of months before he died. He went and met with the King of Saudi Arabia and tried to talk him into supporting the idea. He didn't get very far with it. But they knew what was going on, and it wasn't later until all of these Jewish refugees were kept in the camps. Some of them were wearing SS soldiers' uniforms in these concentration camps. That's where they were housed. And that appeared in the New York Times. Harry Truman was president. And that appeared in the New York Times. People became outraged about it. Like, how can you keep these people in these camps? Meantime, of course, the British knew that their time was coming to an end in the Middle East, and they were not happy about it, particularly in what was then known as Palestine. And and so there was a lot, the seeds of that conflict were being sown at the same time all this other stuff was going on.
Yeah, and for people not familiar with the birth of Israel, it was not pain-free. There were a lot of labor pains. a lot of people died in Palestine as they were trying to create the Israeli state.
And a lot of Americans in the political class and the State Department opposed the founding of the Jewish state. What's so interesting is Stalin supported it. And what's fascinating is Gromyko gives a speech at the UN when it was still at the skating rink. It was in a skating rink in Queens. Some people think that's where it should have stayed. But gave up, and he said, because the Jews are almost wiped out by this, they need a state where they can be safe. He gave that speech, and Golda Meir, the former prime minister of Israel, in her memoirs, and she didn't particularly care for the Russians. She was born in Kiev in Ukraine, and her parents ran away from the pogroms there, said that she felt it was this moment in time when Soviets could, because of what had happened to them in the war, had this enormous sympathy for what had happened to the Jews. And they had this brief moment where they fully supported the establishment of the state. It's a very interesting moment in history. It doesn't last very long. But that's also a piece of this. Not so much a piece of this story, but I always found that rather interesting.
You've enlightened me in a number of areas, Peter Galton. I didn't realize that, and it's so ironic because Stalin at the same time was, ramping up the Cold War. I also didn't know, I knew that FDR went to Yalta. I didn't know that he met with the leaders of Saudi Arabia. That's fascinating.
Yeah, King Ibn Saud, he met him. And it's a very poignant conversation, actually. And he says to him, he tries to talk Ibn Saud into this, and he said, Arabs will never accept that state. And Roosevelt, and he says, and not because they're Jews, but because they're Europeans. And Roosevelt pressed him and said, but they have nowhere to go. And he said to him, that was very interesting, he said, and they're frightened of staying in Europe. And Ibn Saud said to Roosevelt, well, an Arab king would never allow that to happen. He would never allow a defeated enemy to threaten the winners again. To some degree, I think he might be right, and certainly in his view, in his time. But it's a really, and you can find it on the web, it's a wonderful conversation. It's very sad, really sad, because what he said is, why is this going to happen to us? And they really had nothing to do with it, to some degree. And they were wrong. I think they should have. There were Arab leaders who would have welcomed, who did welcome the Jewish state for the very fact that they were Europeans and they felt this would have a modernizing influence. But, of course, Saudi Arabia wasn't one of those states that supported that. Yes. However, it is a really interesting, it's a very murky time. It's a time filled with lots of fear, McCarthy and the rest. It's a very interesting time in American history. I think the most interesting decade of my life, to be sure.
And a very interesting novel, listeners. The title is Nothing Is Forgotten by Peter Galton, and it's been our pleasure to chat with him.
Well, thank you. It was a pleasure to talk to you, Dave, and anytime. You know where I am.
And you said you have a website, too. Can you repeat that for us, please?
Yeah, petergalton.com, just my name, petergalton.com. And you find all kinds of stuff there. I've been writing about my family lately, about why I wrote this book. I've been writing I have all my number of articles up that I've published, other books, interviews with world leaders. There are some taped excerpts. So,
well, nice to chat with you today, Peter. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks again, Dave.
Sure.
Thanks for joining us for today's edition of It's Your Turn with Dave Malarkey here on WISR 680 AM. Today's broadcast is also archived for you online at WISR680.com. Tune in again next time for Dave Malarkey's It's Your Turn, weekdays from 1230 to 130, right here on WISR 680.
We now join Pittsburgh Pirate Baseball with the Pirates down 3-0 to the Reds, heading to the top of the fourth inning.